Get back to him.
Yeah, it was a very low snap. He does an excellent job. It was not a very strong kick. It's just inside the upright.
Grazed it.
Just inside the upright. And Brett Favre is doing flips over there on the Green Bay sideline. What a disappointment for Houston.
So Brett Favre,
oh man. 30.
There is a vote difference in Ohio between Bush and Kerry of 130.
The key to the vortex of power, is bringing those forces into harmony. Bringing those two forces of the male and the female, of the masculine and the feminine, in harmony.
You know something, Vanessa Lutz? I'm getting ready to take a seriously big shit right on top of that pointy little head of yours.
If you heard the yodel, then this should be side two.
Be a smart ass.
Welcome to The Apocalypse Chronicles, featuring James Lloyd, coming to you from Jacksonville, Oregon. For the next hour, James will be discussing Bible prophecy in the modern world.
I saw an ad for a Time Life book. A guy jumped out of an airplane, fell 30,000 feet, his chute didn't open, and he lived to tell the story.
Populist apocalypses had always been guided from above.
A crack at discussing it with them in 1972.
What interests me is why the two of you got together afterwards. I mean,
well,
there was this great thing, which was Jonathan wanted to be a doctor and was torn between the doctor and the stage, and they called him the Doctor of Mirth, and what should he do? And Alan was torn between going on the stage and being a don, or at least a teacher. And I had nothing. I kept thinking, I must invent something. Like, I want to be a nun. Should I go on the stage or not?
There's some clue to your mutual attraction, as they say, in the program notes you've written, each written an essay about the other. Pete, Dud says of you that you'd like to be Elvis Presley.
Yes.
Why?
Well,
He also says you have a relentless lust for power, and although the
True.
Program notes are written in a flippant way, but I mean, is there some kind of truth hidden behind that flippancy?
I'm very aggressive.
Yes.
You know?
So actually, you've become even more aggressive over the years. As you well know, how I've stuck it, I do not know.
You know, at least half or more are going to be for John Kerry. We have a major issue here as to who won Ohio.
So
how clear are you that there's the possibility that the number of votes when all of the spoiled ballots and all of the misvoting are taken into account, the vote for John Kerry might exceed the number of votes for George Bush?
My mission is to bring the sounds of bebop, jazz, and blues to the gay and lesbian community. And it's a very difficult mission. This is a hard thing for me to do because it's not really the music that we in the queer community tend to listen to, is it? You know, like lesbians are always listening to, you know, that... You know, oh, Chernobyl, why? And death and destruction, why? Chernobyl.
A man who relentlessly pursues wealth and his private enjoyments, despite his protestations of impartiality.
As for each and every one of us, when we listen to his very words, do not let your hearts be troubled.
It's clear that Tocqueville favored the heroic aristocrat and not the democratic individualist.
You know something, Vanessa Lutz? I'm getting ready to take a seriously big shit right on top of that pointy little head of yours.
Jesus tells his disciples, which of course includes all of us, that he has to prepare a place for us in his Father's house. This passage from St. John's Gospel is one that I use in my funeral homilies because it embodies our belief in the resurrection of Christ and our part in God's plan for us. I am certain that all of us at one time or another have asked questions about death, especially when we lose a friend or loved one. We ask questions also when we face trouble or difficulties within our own lives. Jesus knew that his disciples would have to face adversity and trials after he returned to his Father. Jesus assures them that his departure is for their own good. He must go to secure them a place in his Father's house.
You have no remorse about showing it to La Chapelle or Pam Anderson or any of your friends?
No.
You don't feel you did her dirty?
No.
See, if a chick's good enough to me to do a video with me and stuff, I ain't sure. First of all, I'm not showing anyone my penis. That's
right,
number
you're
one.
Not showing you.
I'm not as well endowed as you. I'm not. So, hey, first of all, I'm destroying the evidence. I'm like the girl. She's got to be tremendously embarrassed by this, though.
She's, yeah, I'd imagine.
I am fairly certain that if we look at the provisional ballots, if we look at the...
group of Jewish Christians who came to be proclaimed as heretics and
understanding first the principles. Understanding the principles of masculinity, not just writing them down, not just having words in your notes that you know you're going to put away and not take out again, but becoming familiar with those words, becoming familiar with the meaning, being able to observe those functions within yourself. You do them intertwining and therefore sometimes difficult to separate out. But as you can see, this is the masculine me and this is the feminine.
As a special agent of the FBI, I accept the obligation to consider the information coming into my knowledge as a sacred trust. And any direct or indirect disclosure by me of any of this information I understand can cause irreparable damage to the United States.
I do.
As you stretch, and be proud of the fact that you do seek and stretch. Sure, you don't know everything, and that's not to be embarrassed about. That's to be reached for and to be proud of, and to recognize that as the masculine energy, and then to sit back, to open up, and let the knowledge in. Let the knowledge in. Let yourself receive. And to provide and protect instinctively, naturally, spontaneously, as you balance those energies, you're being protected. Being provided with. To notice how much you do in your life and how much you let be done. And to bring these two into harmony. In order to bring them in harmony, you must first be able to work with them, to embrace them, to sense these qualities as they work within you. As they work. Not to separate, but to create harmony by identifying step one. Identifying those principles in your daily function, in your life function. The second, of course, is to understand your imbalances and to know your life and where you are out of balance, out of whack. And as we talked before break, to be able to look up and determine even from your own sensing, are you too strong in one and too weak in the other? And so let us take a few moments now to consider the lack of harmony. The lack of harmony when the anumah, or the masculine, excuse us, the anumas, or the masculine energy is too strong, and or the feminine is too weak. And this does not apply to just you men, listen up, etc. This applies to all of you, those of you who have an overactive masculine energy and an underactive feminine. The first thing that it will produce is a chauvinism, a male chauvinism, a male preference, a male valuing, where you value your reality by the maleness of it, whether you're man or woman, where you disenfranchise women. Maybe they have the vote, but they don't have value. Oh, it's just a woman. Oh, it's just her idea. Oh, I thought it was a man. Oh, I thought he. Oh, it's only a she. Disenfranchised because of your gender. Disenfranchised because of your gender. Or enfranchised because of your gender. In your world, the level of chauvinism, as we said, has not reduced, but indeed has increased. Even to the point now that your statistical references show that women earn something like 63 cents per every dollar that a man earns, down from 10 years ago. It's less per hour now than it was then. Oh, yes, you can explain the statistics. The point of it is, the value of women has been reduced because chauvinism has increased.
New metaphysics time. Time comes along somewhere threaded through the braid, comes into view in the dimensions periodically. At least in my version of reality. Just a swishing, swaying ocean between me and the other. And you know what can happen there.
As they're characterizing them, or the anomalies in the vote count in Ohio.
Oh, yeah. A reaching out beyond the newest world order by the Bush crew, the cabal, with the cute little monkey in the front, kind of like a cereal box government. Well, enough been said there. So we'll hasten an ordering of things today. It's in an end game. Many different Mayan kind of redux, four verb kind of backwards shadowing goes on. My favorite kind of scene. You can be before and behind the camera all at the same time, fast enough in alternation to create butter, I believe the old child's fable goes. Gets lost in the haze, you know, time, self, and place being what they are all. In metaphysics, Gary Geiserman sort of sewn into it. I think sewn during visitation to a sweatshop. along the celestial tundra. WsNewMetaphysics.com and Gary at NewMetaphysics.com. Plug those in. Locate myself in the strata of things today. Post everything. Great work going on. Get one. Get a job, it could be said, for the new man, not the same as the old man. Old man is a monkey, I believe, is the story today. Yeah. Sitting on the electromagnetic field network. Clouds. You saw clouds on the knoll. All is metaphor. And I mean that. The new metaphysics. It'll be hip soon. You know what taking the lead means? It means being all alone. Sometimes not even beside yourself. Alone. Some great doom and gloom stories coming up in the next year or two. Those cats are howling at the moon these days. That can always be a very good sign for the spiritual seeker. Heavy weather are coming, and I believe it's good weather. I usually like to adopt the Mickey philosophy, the Mickey Mouse, because I want it. And on Mountain Stream Radio, on the late night here in the West continent. Comes a time now's the time. It's just a brew of feelings. Like sticks and stones, that's all.
Early in part two of Democracy in America, he sketches the aristocratic attitude.
Aristocracies often commit very tyrannical and inhuman actions, but they rarely entertain groveling thoughts. And they show a kind of haughty contempt of little pleasures, even while they indulge in them. The effect is to raise greatly the general pitch of society. In aristocratic ages, vast ideas are commonly entertained as the dignity, the power, and the greatness of man.
Jonathan Edwards, Timothy Dwight, the president of Yale, and so on. Radicals like the French prophets were left in the ghettos of London. The new populist, democratic, and anti-intellectual apocalypse that emerged in the wake of the great, a second great awakening, had all kinds of curious features. Some we might anticipate earlier, but many not.
To the president in 2004. And
here's Alan Bennett explaining why the working relationship with his fellow fringees was no longer working.
I mean, in a very loose way. Say, if Jonathan's John Lennon, Peter's Paul McCartney, and Dudley's Ringo Starr, and I'm George Harrison.
Men, there are a few key words we pay a lot of attention to here.
So handsome.
Words like bravery, fidelity, integrity,
honor.
Experiences in public bathrooms.
www.stopthedrugwar.org.
While voters in five U.S. states and the District of Columbia went to the polls to approve medical marijuana laws on November 3rd, a Florida group gathering signatures to place their own medical marijuana initiative on the ballot were harassed and threatened with arrest at a polling place at a church in Jacksonville, Florida. Witnesses say representatives of the Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church approached petitioners from Floridians for Medical Rights and asked them to leave. When the group asserted their legal right to collect signatures at any state polling place, the church representatives called police. The police sided with the church, and the group was forced to leave under threat of arrest. Floridians for Medical Rights Director Tony Lehman told DRCNN her group has filed a formal complaint with Jacksonville Sheriff Nathaniel Glover, requesting that the police adopt a written policy and training program to ensure that future petitioners are not harassed. Another complaint filed with the Supervisor of Elections alleges a violation of the civil rights of petitioners and demands that the church be removed from the list of polling places in Jacksonville.
It is against Florida election laws to allow a polling place's ideology to step in front of a petitioner's civil rights. It is against the law, and the sheriff and also the supervisor of elections in that county violated the law and the civil rights of our petitioners.
In spite of the hassles at the Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church, Lehman said overall response to Floridians for Medical Rights petitions have been positive. Polls have shown that as many as 63% of Florida residents favor the legalization of medical marijuana.
You know, when I used to have to hold the door closed for her? Women in this audience, didn't your mother teach you everything you know about a public bathroom? Didn't she? Remember that first time she taught you how to tear off neat little rows of toilet paper so you could line the seat? Because God only knew who had been there before you. Of course, now you're an adult. Whenever you try it, just when you're almost done papering the seat, some breeze comes along, blows the whole thing all over the floor, right? Now, of course, a lot of bathrooms today have these toilet seat covers. But unfortunately, these tissue paper doilies come with no instructions about how to interpret their highly ambiguous design.
Susan Truitt is my guest from Ohio right now. Susan Truitt, how many elections have you participated in the state of Ohio?
As far as a voter, I have been voting since 1976.
It shows in every walk of life, it shows so much in attitude, whether you're male or female, you dismiss it because it's a woman. You devalue it because it's a woman, even to the point that some will say in that particular regard that you know, a man he's important because of what he has between his legs, and a woman is not because of what she's lacking. Yeah.
You cannot get into bed with him without getting fucked. He plays a zero-sum game. That's his drill. Nobody wins unless somebody loses.
You have nothing as though your sexual organs are nothing.
This aspect of Tocqueville's thought is obviously related to many of his idealistic concerns, but it is linked also to his ardor for the imperialism of the European states and his fondness for war. Tocqueville was excited by the prospect of Europe's conquering much of the world, which he foresaw as occurring in the second half of the 19th century. Gabineau, who was a student of Oriental history, had written to Tocqueville predicting the eventual decline of the West. Tocqueville fired back a reply.
You say that one day we shall resemble your Eastern mob. Perhaps. But before that happens, we shall be their masters. A few million men who, a few centuries ago, lived nearly shirtless in the forest and in the marshes of Europe will, within 100 years, have transformed the globe and dominated the other races.
Report released this week from the Massachusetts Department of Corrections is the latest in a series of studies from several states which indicate that the unintended consequences of mandatory minimum sentencing include harsh sentences for nonviolent first-time drug offenders who often end up spending more time behind bars than inmates convicted of more serious crimes. According to the report, 84% of Massachusetts inmates serving mandatory minimum sentences for drug offenses are first-time offenders. The average minimum sentence for these offenders is 5 years, as much as a year longer than the average sentence for violent criminals. Mandatory minimum sentencing has come under attack in recent years by judges, defense attorneys, and justice advocates because it eliminates the court's ability to take into account the particular
That's why doctors are so ready to take them out all the time. Something's wrong here. Ah, let's do a hysterectomy. You don't need your sexual organs anymore.
Was democratic in this sense. It was opposed to kingcraft. It was opposed to the authority of government. It was opposed to priestcraft.
Who was the founder of the Buddhist tradition?
Well, the debate over euthanizing people, death with dignity, you've heard these terms. And
but I also mentioned at the end of the lecture that the Mahayana vision of the universe expanded dramatically.
Basically, what that means is people being able to choose the time of their death and doing it by euthanasia. With me now is Eric Hester, who's with the group called Death with Dignity, a 15,000-member strong coalition of pro-choice and death with dignity advocates. And Eric, thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Phil.
Can you tell me what your position is right now?
Well, Phil, it is our position that people be allowed to have a dignified and decent death, and by that we mean euthanasia, in a way that respects their humanity. Phil, we see so many elderly who are kept alive long after they've been useful to society. We see so many of them forced into lives of poverty. Elderly people who are forced into eating cat food. Elderly people who have no homes.
And the law law permitted the county boards of elections then to revisit their contracts, that Blackwell had basically forced them to...
The final indignation of life. And I think if you get to a certain age...
Let's just take it out. Now they're even doing preventative surgery. Look, since so many women get vaginal cancers, since you're past childbearing age, let's just take it out.
All of this started to happen after, when did this model start? I mean, you talk about Teddy Roosevelt's grandson as being, but how long is this?
I have made several experiments, and I have come to this conclusion.
So?
You think that you have lost your love. Well, I saw her yesterday. It is you that she is thinking of, and she's told me what to say. She says she loves you.
Yeah!
Yeah? Yeah. She loves you.
Yeah!
Yeah! Yeah! She loves you.
Yeah! Yeah.
So you prevent getting cancer. But you would never hear that same doctor suggesting to a man, let's just castrate you. I mean, you're not going to have any more kids, right?
Particular circumstances of a given case. DRCNN spoke with Monica Pratt of Families Against Mandatory Minimums, who believes the states will be the driving force behind the repeal of mandatory minimum sentencing laws.
I think that we're going to start seeing many of the states reexamining their mandatory sentencing laws because, number one, they just can't afford it, and number two, as more people become educated about these laws, they're not going to take it anymore. I think that as more people understand exactly who is serving the harshest sentences in these prisons, that the public is going to begin to oppose the laws on a large-scale basis and mobilize to convince their legislators to change them.
Families Against Mandatory Minimums is on the web at www.famm.org.
So what do you need there? What do you need those testicles for? Let's just cut them off.
Visit their contracts. That Blackwell had basically forced them to...
Ah!
Yeah! Yeah! Yeah!
She's not very sensual, 'cause she's got no genitals. She feels sensational, 'cause her mouth is electrical. Ah! Having fun with my girlfriend is always a cinch when she's pumped up to 35 pounds per square inch. She used to be fun for me till she busted. But
the country.
Foreign leaders to agree to take on these giant loans that will indebt them to the United States literally and figuratively until the United States wrings whatever we want to get out of them.
Is the aid going to Colombia high interest loans, or is it real gifts? That's question one.
Exactly correct, yes.
So were you, I mean, technically your title was that you were an economist.
Right. In fact, I became chief economist. I ended up having 50 people working for me.
What we're calling aid is a, I wouldn't call it a gift because it's a terror. I don't call jet planes gifts, but it's given to Colombia.
I trained them to do basically the same sort of things. Yes, I was an economist.
It's paid for by the U.S. taxpayers.
The doctor would be locked up.
And it is crucial that we never forget the social contract, which, as we know, is the foundation of morality.
Have no patients, male or female, any longer. He would be insane to suggest that, but yet in your society, in your world, it is very much normal to think, let's just remove that large vagina. They're even considering doing preventative breast mastectomies, because so many women get breast cancer. Look, you don't need them, you're not going to nurse children anymore, let's just take them off, just replace them, just cut them off, and you don't need them. Preventative care, aren't you glad? I get a trip around the world and you are safe from cancer, eh? What, next, take out your brain because you might get a brain tumor? Oh, certainly not. Brains are important. But breasts and vaginas are not. Even to the saints are telling somebody, yeah, that vagina of yours is not yours. You don't own it, the state owns it. The state gets to tell you whether or not you have to have a child or not. It's not your choice. The state decides. You don't own that body. The state does. Masculine energy does, whether it's being spoken through a male or female voice. See, that's when it comes in, the disenfranchisement. When the male energy is too strong or the female is too weak, you get that particular energy called chauvinism. The second thing that you get is a reality filled with form. Filled with form, with very little content and no particular attention to context at all. All form, that's what matters, that's what counts. Not what you learn, but what grade did you get for it. You're not how well do you do your job, but what title do you have. Not how nice is the person you're with, but what do they look like. All form. So many men in that particular sense who get caught up in that want a woman who's going to impress, not them, but they're male cronies. Who are they trying to impress? Who are they trying to win over? Not her. Yeah. Just look good. Have the right hair, have the right body build, have the right everything, etc. So when I walk into that place, they think I'm something. And women the same way. The chauvinism of womanhood, the overemphasis of male energy. Similarly, all form. I don't care if he can think or do anything, just what's he look like? And what's he look like? Has he got the right color hair? Has he got the right type of glasses? Does he wear expensive enough clothes and shoes, etc.? So when I walk in, they, my girlfriends, will go, wow, did you catch a big one? Women are sex objects and men become success objects. In this sense of all form. With very little attention to content and no attention to context. Thirdly, what happens is that you become what would be called a dehumanized machine. You have feelings, but you suppress them all, you stuff them all, you get rid of them all. And you just function, yes? You see the yuppie, the yuppie personality that is You know, what there's a saying now that there aren't really any yuppies, they're just three quarters of the population trying to become one. But that sense of a dehumanized machine that is just functioning to get more, to have more, two cars, two televisions, a summer home and a winter home, whatever, etc. it is. Up at 6 in the morning, into the work, into the office, etc., wearing the right clothes, the uniform, carrying the uniform briefcase, wearing the uniform Reeboks until you get to work, yes, and then putting on your work shoes, etc. That whole uniformed approach, etc., machines that function. No feeling. Well, there's feeling. It's just been suppressed. Along about 45, they develop cancer, and along about 47, they die.
So many laws. Find one you can break.
Walter, the woman is a fool.
Morality has nothing to do with this so-called social contract. We are moral when we feel that there is holiness in the air and everything you do counts.
We're going to have to take a quick break here, but when we come back, one of the things that I think is so interesting is that you think about the world.
Lobbyists in Washington on the Columbia plan, you'll see where it's going to. The main lobbyists are military industry and the oil corporations.
As being a bank, which is not, and B, something that is internationally oriented.
Dominated the other races.
They're lobbying because they want American taxpayers to
develop cancer,
buy military helicopters, chemical weapons, biological weapons, send arms and so on to carry out actions in Colombia, which will be in their interest.
Which, as we know, is the foundation of morality.
These countries and these loans come about because of Congress between the bank and the company, but you were the one.
That Europe will, within 100 years, have transformed the globe and dominate.
I give you veto power over my radio.
Walter, the woman is a fool.
Machines. Put out. Machines.
wasn't just a small group of monks imitating the ideal of a human being, the human being Siddhartha, Gautama, Shakyamuni, Buddha, but began to imagine themselves as actors and players on a drama that was really cosmic in scope.
Morality has nothing to do with this so-called social contract.
And what that means for us is that the Mahayana begins to imagine a universe that is populated not just by human bodhisattvas like us, like you and me, but by celestial bodhisattvas and Buddhas who have infinitely greater powers.
No human being anymore.
We're making the loans happen. And you were the one who made sure that they happened in a way that was going to benefit the United States.
Machines.
Screw the country that's getting the loan and screw the bank.
It's not about economics. It's about deal making.
Do you think that he's been killing all them girls on the freeway, Bob? Why are you killing all them girls, Bob?
I've absolutely reached my fucking limit with people like you, Vanessa.
What kind of people am I supposed to be?
Alcoholics, the drug addicts, the fathers who fuck their daughters, the drug addicted mother fucking whores with their bastard fucking off.
Hey, I ain't no trick baby.
Garbage people. Garbage people.
We are moral when we feel that there is holiness in the air and everything you do counts.
That sounds a touch narcissistic
nothing
to me.
Okay, your serve.
Narcissistic.
Nothing narcissistic about it.
I'm sitting here with Lemmy of Motorhead. Lemmy, this recording from King Biscuit Flower Hour, it was recorded in 1983 at Lemours.
I have no memory of it whatsoever.
The idea, Kenji. He lay awake at night. The idea, Kenji.
How can you know what God wants?
just working machines, or play machines, or growth machines, or whatever machines. And fourthly, what happens in that regard when it's totally in that place, of the male energy so powerful, or the female energy so weak in that particular regard, is after that sense of disenfranchisement or devaluing of the feminine and the enfranchisement and overvaluing of the masculine, after that point of just form with no content or context, after that point of the dehumanization, comes in that sense of being caught or imprisoned by the image or the mystique, the image of what it is to be a man. I can't feel, I can't cry, I can't do this, I can't do that. The image of what it is to be a woman. I have to behave this way and that way and the other. Caught in that, imprisoned in the very image and in the very mystique that you have generated.
You have something you want to ask me? Ask me. Ask me. Go.
I can't. I'm scared of you.
About empire building, and that's what we did.
So Colombia, they'll pay for it, but they'll pay for it in blood, not in dollars.
We will be back with John Perkins. He's the author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman. He's been everywhere.
Aid is a bad word for it. The second question.
He's Vietnam as well, right? Kept you from being drafted?
That's right, it did.
And
Bush should have used that excuse. I am a scary, scary operative.
Yes, I'm an economic hitman, so I couldn't have gone. But then you also joined the Peace Corps.
Well, right. Actually, the NSA then sent me into the Peace Corps to work with indigenous people in the Amazon who were fighting the oil companies. So I would get some good on-the-job training.
Because they wanted you to, they wanted to see what you'd be like operating in another country, because they wanted you to get language skills. Why did they want you to go?
All of the above. It was a test to a certain degree, and it was also experience for me.
Okay.
And living with these people, to see whether I'd be co-opted by them to a certain degree, too.
So how long were you in the Peace Corps for?
About 3 years.
In Ecuador the whole time?
In Ecuador, right.
And at the end of that, what then happened? What did you decide to do?
Well, about a year before the end of that, this vice president from a major international consulting firm who was also in the Army Reserve Intelligence Division connected with the NSA came down and met me and continued, you know, checking me out, asked me to write him letters about the economy and so on and so forth of Ecuador, and we corresponded for a year. He continued to check me out and test me and see where my loyalties were, etc. And at the end of my score duty, he invited me up to Boston and hired me.
So you got hired. You were still very young at that point. You're probably like 26.
Right.
I was 26. Point. And did you immediately start working on big international loans, World Bank loans?
Well, they kept me in Boston for about 9 months in training when I was with Claudine, this trainer that I had. And then about 9 months later, sent me off to Indonesia when I did my first job.
Yeah. And that was the electricity, right? The energy bill for Indonesia?
Mm-hmm.
So tell us, either use Indonesia or use Panama, or use one of the other examples, one of the examples from your book to walk us through how what you did, for lack of a better term, screwed the country that was getting the loan and helped U.S., the U.S. government and U.S. corporations.
How? The question was, we should look at Colombia uniquely because of its unique properties, not in the context of places like, say, Turkey. I mean, I partially agree with that. Every place has its own specific problems. But we misunderstand what's going on in the world unless we see the patterns. Remember, we're not talking about the problems of Colombia, Turkey, Bolivia, East Timor, and so on. We're talking mainly about the United States. These problems trace back here. And there are patterns that extend over time and over places. They're adapted to circumstances. Each country is individual. But I think it is extremely significant to notice that that military aid to Turkey, as I said, I'll repeat it, shot up, not because of the Cold War or anything else, but because of the need to suppress the domestic insurgency, which was a reaction to enormous repression. And that aid, so-called aid, declined when the insurgency was destroyed with extreme brutality, some of the worst brutality of the 1990s.
You can feel
God, in your heart, seem to know exactly what God wants.
Okay. What station does he want you to listen to?
Ha ha ha.
Let There Be Light FM? Sorry.
Who have the ability to intervene in this world and save people as if they were gods.
Thousands of people die. Thousands of people died.
Nothing happened.
Well.
After Lewis left me, I'd been having these horrible nights. And then... Ben? And then she arrived.
Lumen, phosphor, fluor, candle. I unfold my leaves, bright steel in salutation, open sharp before you. Friar Walter, long descended, well prepared.
No, I'm not prepared for anything. I have lots to do.
American prophet, tonight you become American eye that pierceth dark. American heart, all hot for truth. The true great vocalist, the knowing mind, tongue of the land, seer head!
Oh, shoo! You're scaring the shit out of me! Get the fuck out of my room, please! Oh, please. Please. Oh.
As it declined and moved from first place, Columbia moved into first place because it's facing the same problems. It has carried out the military and its paramilitary forces aimed and trained by the U.S. have carried out immense atrocities. Like Columbia now has the largest internal refugee population in the world outside of Sudan and Afghanistan, I think, third in the world. And the number of killings is enormous and going up. But it hasn't succeeded, so that's becoming in first place. And that's only pieces of a much bigger pattern. I mentioned Central America and others. And I think it makes good sense to look at the global patterns if we want to understand what's happening. But yes, I agree with you that look at the specifics of Colombia, and that's, in fact, most of what I talked about. As to the narco-traffickers being pervasive in Colombia, that's not exactly what I said. I quoted the Drug Enforcement Agency of the United States government, the leading agency concerned with drugs, which published a major report on this. And what it pointed out is that narco-trafficking is pervasive at every level of government in Colombia.
Okay. You're listening to DRCNN, the Drug Reform Coordination Network.
But they're not at the highest levels of government. At the height of the United States government, the leading agency concerned with drugs, which published a major report on this. And what it pointed out is that narco-trafficking is pervasive at every level of government.
Well, Indonesia is a great example because we knew at that point, the government knew that we were going to lose Vietnam. And Indonesia was part of the domino effect. So Indonesia had a lot of oil. It was the next Southeast Asian country they were afraid was going to go. It also happens to have the largest Muslim population of any country in the world. So there were many reasons to win Indonesia over. So the idea was to give Indonesia these huge loans that would indebt them to us for a long time, build them these systems that would help the very wealthy people and also help our own oil companies there. And all the work came back to our own companies, as I mentioned before, the Halliburtons, the Bechtels, the Stone & Webster's, et cetera, et cetera.
And so you do the intellectual work and the paperwork and the accounting work to make it to justify the loan, to make it possible for them to get the
loan. Well, I was responsible for that. I have to say, I only graduated with a Bachelor of Science degree in economics.
Yeah, that's where I'm trying to get to. You're not a senior economist.
I'm not an economist. I was a lousy economist, but I had a bunch of good ones working for me. I had MBAs and PhDs, and they did all the paperwork. My job was to make the deals. I was the deal maker. I was the guy on the ground in those countries. I met with the Shah of Iran. I met with the president of Panama, Omar Torrijos. I met with the president of the World Bank, Robert McNamara. I was the guy that was doing the deals and doing a lot of the undercover stuff in the countries. And I had lots of very competent financial guys and economists and accountants and so on and so forth behind me developing econometric models, et cetera, that we used to justify these things. But the deals were made, and then the paperwork, all the studies justify the deal that we wanted to make.
And the money never left the United States. Most of it.
Yeah.
It's a $1 billion loan from the World Bank to Panama, say, or to Indonesia. And the money gets moved, in theory, to this country, but really it just stays in the United States and goes to the big U.S. companies that then do the infrastructure work that has been paid for.
And you have it exactly right. It goes down to Houston, or it goes to San Francisco, it goes to Halliburton, Bechtel, whoever.
Why? Everybody, Chernobyl.
I would love to hear that story.
You're listening to DRCNN, the Drug Reform Coordination Network News, raising awareness of the consequences of drug prohibition. Visit us on the web at www.stopthedrugwar.org. While voters in 5 U.S. states and the District of Columbia went to the polls to approve medical marijuana laws on November 3rd, a Florida group gathering signatures to place their own medical marijuana initiative on the ballot were harassed and threatened with arrest at a polling place at a church in Jacksonville, Florida.
Double as a music critic for the New York Times.
You mean Harold Schoenberg?
Right, and as you probably know, Schoenberg spent the summer in Reykjavik.
Yes, I saw some of his dispatches.
And I think he started out by proclaiming Fischer the Mozart of chess.
The implication being, I suppose, that Fischer brings a pure classical symmetry
right,
to bear on his chess.
Right, that was the implication, yes. But by the end of the summer, he was calling Fischer the Beethoven of chess. Matter of fact, I'm surprised he didn't manage to dub Spassky the Cherubini of chess or the Salieri of chess or something while he was at it. But anyway, he decided to upgrade Fischer because he claimed to have discovered qualities of Beethoven-like innovation in Fischer's variational play.
And
put down the Look, I can't. I'm on an important call.
Have you ever seen the paperback of this, by the way?
No.
This is your
quote.
Yes,
right.
Oh, God, read it.
Reading the Stones of Summer was crossing another Rubicon, discovering a new sensibility, a brave new world of consciousness. It's a holy book, and it burns with a sacred fire, a generational fire, moon fire, stone fire.
Now, whatever you think of that now, that to an 18-year-old, which I was, sold me the book. Here's what's neat about this, okay? August was always an endless day, he felt. White as wood, slow as light. Light in August, and August has the kid. Light in August has the kid.
Sure.
Do you think he's was that literary and deliberate about some of these things?
I couldn't tell you. That you're going to have to ask. Who knows? He uses images that are on the surface nonsensical, okay? Which a poet does. You've got to ponder them like white as wood. Conversations in the car were like great wood eyes. What does he mean?
Right, but there's lots of that all through the book. This is one of the few books, though, that you can read with lots of that, that you're not off-put by. He pulls it off. You know,
right.
He pulls a lot of this off in a poetic way.
Yeah. And Kid wrote that in an expository essay. You say, what do you mean vague with towns? What's this vague with towns? Blue fences and so forth. Crossroads vacant of cars. Some are perfectly sensible and connotative. Others are what we call denotative. That is to say, they're suggestive. They don't give you a precise image. Okay?
And you get the.
Consciousness is at one and the same time the most familiar and the most mysterious feature of our lives.
She said you hurt her so
good.
She almost lost her mind.
And therefore becoming a prisoner of the very form that has been generated. And fifthly, caught in the world of domination, of having to dominate or be dominated, having to control or be controlled, having to manipulate or be manipulated.
So all of this started to happen after, when did this model start happening? I mean, you talk about Teddy Roosevelt's grandson as being, but how long has this model of doing business and having people like you, economic hitman, involved in this deal making, how long has this been happening?
Well, the World Bank really started right at the end of World War II as a means for reconstructing a devastated Europe. And it did that. But in the process, reconstructing a devastated Europe also meant fighting communism, because the big threat now after World War II was Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And so the World Bank immediately became politicized. And Teddy Roosevelt's grandson, Kermit Roosevelt, was a CIA agent who overthrew a democratically elected president of Iran, Mossadegh, who was the Time magazine's Man of the Year in 1951. Mossadegh nationalized petroleum companies. And so Kermit Roosevelt was sent in to get rid of him, and he did a beautiful job without any military involvement. We were afraid to bring in the military because of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So he did it without the military by just spending a few million dollars and fomenting revolution and making Mossadegh look bad. But we overthrew this democratically elected guy, and it was very successful. You could say that Kermit was really the first economic hitman.
Colombia, okay? That has nothing to do with whether Colombians are decent people. Sure, they're very decent people, but they're not at the highest levels of government. At the higher levels of government, it's just narco-trafficking is pervasive, including the military, and including the paramilitary associates. Actually, for the first time, the main paramilitary leader Carlos Castaño appeared on television. If you're Colombian, you know this. Appeared on television a couple of weeks ago, and he announced publicly that 70% of, that's the figure I gave, that 70% of the of their funding was from narco trafficking. As I say, the Colombian government attributes 80% of the atrocities to them, and they're vicious atrocities. So yeah, it's pervasive at the high levels of government and right throughout the military. I mean, just last year, a Colombian Air Force plane was stopped for some, somebody investigated it for some reason in Florida, and they discovered drugs all over the place and impounded the plane, and a couple of high military officers ended up in jail. That was because it was a random inspection. But there's no, it's no secret that the military, the narco-traffickers, the landowners, and the government are all in bed together, and that the paramilitaries are part of it, exactly as they say. You pointed out correctly that part of the problem in Colombia is the consumption here, but that's what I'm talking about when I say that peasants seek to what are, when peasants are driven to seek agro-export, which has a stable market. They are forced into drug production because there's a stable market, and the stable market is here. And if you want to deal with that aspect of the problem, which we should, you know, there's a way to do it. The way to do it is by prevention, treatment, and elimination of the socioeconomic conditions that lead to it. That's here, you know, and I ended up talking about that.
Fine, leave. Your project's set up. You don't need me anymore. You got what you wanted, and I got laid. Got to give action to get action.
Yeah, that's it. That's it exactly. Congratulations, guy. You just graduated. You're gonna make a killing in this business.
It was anti-clerical. It was opposed to lawyer craft. Lawyers were basically a bunch of shysters designed to cheat the common man, and we've heard this one before too. And indeed, it was opposed to doctor craft. Physicians were there really to mislead and misguide people. And we've heard this as well with no less than George Fox and the Quakers. They insisted in an anti-authoritarian way that you had to be self-reliant. You needed the scripture and a clear head, and quite frankly, you might not even need the latter. But if it was democratic, if it had drawn on ideas that had existed before, it was different in other ways. It was anti-secular, and it was anti-intellectual. Contrast this with the English Revolution. Both Winstanley and Hobbes were violently opposed to the universities. They were the seats of Antichrist. They had great hostility towards the great chain of being and scholasticism. Both Winstanley and Hobbes had significant things to say, though, about science and its program. Both rejected tradition and authority from well-wrought intellectual positions of significance. And neither Hobbes nor Winstanley, nor any within the English Revolution, could genuinely be described as anti-secular for the very simple reason there was no secular option. Their thinking would in fact create just that option. The apocalypse is a dynamic which creates the secular world. Secularism is the result of tensions within religion. But that was no longer the case in the early 19th century. Even the first Great Awakening with Jonathan Edwards, you will recall, involved the most advanced thinking of the day, real cutting-edge stuff, Isaac Newton and John Locke. But in the early 19th century, we've got something else. We've got a world of folk magic, popular prophecy, personal revelation where you add new books to scripture, and we've got a range of apocalypses that is truly extraordinary. And typically, these apocalypses are catastrophic. It's not something we're gradually leading up to, but out of the clouds, out of the clouds on one particular day, the Lord will appear.
For example, our magnetic shield takes the brunt of space storms, but some energy slips through the cracks, sometimes enough to cause...
And the tribulations predicted in both the New and the Old Testament will be sitting there upon us.
There you have it. That might be the answer to how, with everything else being equal and the numbers not supporting the really odd propagation we've been experiencing, that, like a house with cracks, our magnetosphere has cracks, and it's letting these very fast solar winds zip in and scar the couch.
It's familiar to us because that's what our life consists in. I mean, we're in a state of consciousness from the time we wake up in the morning.
Yes, Jones, to all these personifications.
Yes,
I mean, it's all personification.
Intensely poetic. She was hard as diamonds, that, of course, is fine. A closer, more possible carbon horizon, okay? Well, carbon, diamonds is carbon, okay? Diamonds are carbon. And so you have some sense. But again, it's evocative. And once you're into it...
It had been locked in frozen peat and other permafrost zones, is then released through melting. So...
And it doesn't take too long because of that first paragraph. It stays with you and you stay with it.
Internationally recognized, critically acclaimed, world-famous Phil.
Was Kermit Roosevelt was a CIA agent.
Who evidently have killed him in order to learn the whereabouts of the Grail.
So what he did could be traced back to the U.S. government,
right,
that way.
Right, right.
Welcome to the show. We're back live. It's
the decision was made at that point. Let's never do it again with government agents. Let's use third party. Let's use private enterprises. Let's use big consulting firms. Let's use their people like me, what I became, to do this.
And are the big consulting firms, are the private companies in on it? Do they know that's when you got hired at this consulting firm in Boston and you had all this training from Claudine at the and through all this stuff coordinated through the NSA, you're originally recruited by the NSA. Are the companies in on it? Do they know what's happening?
Well, it's a very good point, Rachel, because yes, the people at the top do, but the majority of the people don't. So you've got thousands of people working for organizations like the World Bank or Halliburton or Bechtel who think they're good engineers.
Yeah.
They're designing systems. They don't realize what pawns they are in the system.
It's we're back live. Welcome to the show.
To the show. It's where you put things in front of yourself. New metaphysics. Back here in the studio. High. Directly across from glorious working class neighborhood where people who have afflicted money concepts and their belief pools congregate. On street parking available for local entrepreneurs and other aspiring residents. On the internet for up and down, down and stream. Collect them, trade with friends, that sort of thing. So it all comes down to just a binary interpretation. At least the stupid things that people are stupid about. All the rest is points of departure from the terminal. So why are people without hundreds of thousands of shares in a portfolio Republicans? Why is Marx completely backwards? Why has the proletarian risen up and fallen down? Well, it's quite simple. This is a domination reality. One pole dominating the other, since there's no one else here. If you're talking to me, I'm the only one here. So we all must hate the feminine, or yin. Going on for a long time, becomes invisible, especially since it's the masculine or the yang doing the dominating. They've always had the illusion of being first, given to them by the feminine, since the beginnings of things are always in the flux state. Outside the system, but all throughout the system as well. You know how a binary system works by now. You've had how many decades of life experience just in this life alone? You know how they work by now. You don't just have number one moving to two. You couldn't have any kind of a simulation of a whole that way. You would still be within the big system. Domination reality, prime directive is that we are an island. Even though it was denied later on by a literary figure and repeated as a mantra, of course, as all denials are wont to be. Masculine hitting the feminine. Kind of like Windows hating Apple. Good analogy there. Since now things are at base level, latter stages of the last stage of what is in reality the beginning stages of the first stage. That's right. Since 1993, April 23rd, it all flipped. We've all been double agents since then, or perhaps triples. Or the rarely cited quadruple agent. Hard to see those. They can disappear as soon as they leave your sight. Things are very basal these days. People don't need propaganda anymore. Just point them. Especially Americans. Great cow-eating country. Mother haters. And you know what happens when you have an affliction to the feminine. It's the inverse of the killer instinct. Instead of killing your enemy, you attack your enemy. Never really kill it, because then what have we got? I ask you.
This is your
quote.
Go ahead, read it.
Reading The Stones of Summer was crossing another Rubicon, discovering a new sensibility, a brave new world of consciousness. It's a holy book, and it burns with a sacred fire, a generational fire, moon fire, stone fire.
Now, whatever you think of that now, that to an 18-year-old, which I was, sold me the book. Here's what's neat about this, okay? August was always an endless day, he felt. White as wood, slow as light. Light in August, and August has the kid. Light in August has the kid.
Sure.
Do you think he's was that literary and deliberate about some of these things?
I couldn't tell you. That you're going to have to ask. Who knows? He uses images that are, on the surface, nonsensical, okay? Which a poet does. You've got to ponder them. Like...
Simpson was sure. Dawes was sure. Sure, he had never heard Simpson curse before. Not.
The blue fences and so forth. Crossroads, vacant of cars. Some are perfectly sensible and connotative. Others are what we call denotative. That is to say, they're suggestive. They don't suggest, they don't give you a precise image. Okay?
And you get those feelings through all these personifications.
Yes,
I mean, it's
course.
All personification. Everywhere.
Intensely poetic. She was hard as diamonds, that, of course, is fine. A closer, more possible carbon horizon, okay? Well, carbon, diamonds is carbon, okay? Diamonds are carbon. And so you have some sense, but again, it's evocative. And once you're into it, and it doesn't take too long because of that first paragraph, it stays with you, and you stay with it. It's a very intense experience.
And then sometimes he's very clear.
And clear.
You know, Leon was still surprised. Surprised she'd gotten up. Surprised she was walking out. Surprised at where she suddenly found herself. Surprised she'd even come.
Mm.
Simpson was sure. Dawes was sure. Sure, he had never heard Simpson curse before. Not once. Talking about his father. Sure it was the right time for it. Sure that he must have just been saving it. Sure that Simpson had been one beautiful bastard for a minute there. Sure that the amazement and so on and so... You know, he doesn't do that the whole time. You know, that
no.
He goes and comes. And in the middle section...
There's several stops.
Right, in the middle section...
This is where the father gets up and denounces the minister, you know. Tells him... You know, you're a son of a bitch, and this is baloney you're feeding us here. The kid likes that. You know, that's what he likes in his friend, too, is the challenge to the establishment.
Rodney.
That's why it's a generational, the anti-authoritarian structure in here. Even the father is with you. The father is the bad guy. The father is the repressive guy. Here it's Arthur, the uncle, who's the bad and repressive guy.
You know? No.
Of course, there's always a few that know. They have to know.
Our guest.
So awards as well as the potential. Our education system doesn't take us there. It's the reason I finally wrote the book. 9/11 convinced me I had to write this book because the American people need to know what our tax dollars are going toward and how the robber barons who run these big companies that we have are benefiting at our expense. You know, like 25% of the world's resources come into 5% of the world's population, the United States. But the fact of the matter is only 1% of that 5%, only 1% of the U.S. population controls more wealth than the 90% at the bottom. So in fact, all these world resources are being channeled into us to satisfy the gluttony of 1% of our population.
And we talk about that statistic. We talk about that.
Knowing the places and you know, areas like that, or are they less informed today?
They're less informed because it was a simpler world then.
Jackson, that cat is something.
Throughout the day, until we go to sleep at night or otherwise become unconscious.
Big cunt. Small women's all cunt. It's true, some of the skinny bitches got the biggest pussies in the world, isn't it?
Darling, you such a skinny bitch. Honey, you but a skinny bitch. Darling, you is a skinny bitch. But your pussy's so damn big.
Now she says she knows that you're not the hurting kind.
I am.
She says she loves you.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. She loves you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She loves you.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's up to you. I think that it's only fair. Pride can hurt you too. Apologize to her. Because she loves you.
Yeah.
This is the first time that empire has been built without much military force.
Is giving the signal to surge on an individual.
I wish I looked a bit more like it, but I mean, I think we all of us had a very
sort of stereotype view of each other's character.
But at the same time, it's mysterious because we've got a great deal of difficulty in trying to figure out how.
Surely nobody can tell Dawes anything in the book.
Except for his friend, Crown. Crown can tell him.
But not the other guys, Duncan or Eddie or his teenage friend.
No, they're just stuffing. The paperboy threw a column of newsprint at him and rode off in a distance of sleeping tin. The morning cast up gold birds. Without turning, Dow knew that his mother was at the door, finding a carless son where she'd only expected to find clean, well-dusted, homogenized bottles of milk.
Right, and there's a couple of things. Finding a carless son when it's so easy to read that careless or whatever. But the paperboy threw a column of newsprint. You know, I don't know. It's like Dos Passos or something.
Yeah, like reading Faulkner. I say, look, just go with it. You know, you go with the flow. And if it doesn't make immediate sense, it may make eventual sense. But you're going to get the gist, so you don't sweat it out. The same with reading Pound or reading Eliot, who are highly denotative poets.
Sir, welcome to the National Cheese Emporium.
Thank you, my good man.
What can I do for you, sir?
Well, I was sitting in the public library in Thurman Street just now, skimming through Rogue Heres by Hugh Walpole, and I suddenly came over all peckish.
Peckish, sir?
Esurient.
Eh?
Yeah, we're all hungry-like.
Ah, hungry.
In a nutshell. And I thought to myself, a little fermented curd will do the trick. So I curtailed my Walpoling activities, sallied forth and infiltrated your place of purveyance to negotiate the vending of some cheesy comestibles.
Come again.
I want to buy some cheese.
Oh, I thought you were complaining about the bouzouki player.
Oh, heaven forbid. I am one who delights in all manifestations of the Terpsichorean muse.
Sorry?
Ooh, like a nice junior Forstoo.
So he can go on playing, can he?
Most certainly. Now then, some cheese, please, my good man.
Certainly, sir. What would you like?
Well, how about a little Red Leicester?
I'm afraid we're fresh out of Red Leicester, sir.
Oh, never mind. How are you on Tilsit?
I'm afraid we never have that at the end of the week, sir. We'll get it fresh on Monday.
Tish, tish. No matter. Well, stout yeoman, 4 ounces of Caerphilly, if you please.
Ah, it's been on order, sir, for 2 weeks. I was expecting it this morning.
On my lucky day, is it? Bell Paisley?
Sorry, sir.
Red Windsor?
Normally, sir, yes. Today, the van broke down.
Ah. Stilton?
Sorry.
Emmental? Gruyere?
Nope.
Any Norwegian Jarlsberger, perchance?
Nope.
Liptar?
Nope.
Lancashire?
Nope.
White Stilton?
Nope.
Enishbrew?
Nope.
Double Gloucester?
Nope.
Cheshire?
Nope.
Dorset Blue Vinny?
Nope.
Brie, Roquefort, Pont-l'Evêque, Port-Salut, Savoyard, Saint-Paulin, Carré de l'Est, Brest-Bleu, Brossard?
Nope.
Camembert, perhaps.
Ah, we have Camembert, yes.
You do? Excellent.
Yes. But it's a bit runny.
Oh, I like it runny.
Well, it's very runny, actually.
No matter. Fetch hither le fromage de la belle France.
I think it's a bit runnier than you'll like it, sir.
I don't care how fucking runny it is. Hand it over with all speed.
Oh! Oh!
What now?
The cat's eating it.
Comes in as a last resort. But for the most part, it's being done in very subtle means through.
There could be social radicalism in some cases, and this would be true of the black churches, which really emerge in the early 19th.
They're less informed because it was a simpler world then.
Yeah. Yeah, she loves you.
This is the first time that empire has been built without much military force. The military comes in as a last resort.
Needed the other races. Seldom has Providence shown us an aspect of the future so clearly.
for the most part, it's being done in very subtle means through economics, and most people don't understand that. Back in the 50s and in the 60s, you know, we were fighting wars in places like Korea, and it was done with military might, the same as World War II. It's all pretty out in the open, but this has been so subtle. We've built the biggest empire in the history of the world, and we've done it largely without using military might.
Our guest is John Perkins. The book is called Confessions of an Economist.
In fact, that have been talking about doing this, but we'll see what happens. And you know, you got to be careful with film.
Yeah, watch out for those guys.
Exactly. An hour and a half to 2 hours to tell a story like this. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, it's pretty dramatic. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, you talked a little bit about why you got into it and why you got recruited, but what did you get out of it? Did you get rich doing this?
I made a lot of money, and more importantly than that, at the time, I traveled everywhere first class. You know, I sat up in the hump of the 747 and stayed in the best hotels, often in the presidential suites or whatever. I had lots of good sex, drugs, and rock and roll, if you want to put it that way. I mean, you know, and I talk about this in the book. It was a great life. I traveled all over the world. I hung out with some of the most beautiful women in the world, which was important to me at the time.
Right.
I had lots of money. I had a huge expense account. And I was an owner in this consulting firm, and so I was getting rich, too.
Let me ask you this question. How do you get a check? Is it a check from a consulting firm?
Yes. Yes. This is all done through private companies.
Right.
So the consulting firm gets a check from the World Bank or the State Department. You know, for legitimate consulting services, they're legitimate in quotes, and then they pay me.
Now, none of what you did was illegal, was it?
Well, most of what I did wasn't illegal, but in the book I talk about the Saudi Arabia deal that we did, which was a big one in the 70s. I mean, it set the tone for everything, including what's happened in Iraq today. And in that particular case, we had to win over a bunch of Saudi princes, and in order to do that, we did a lot of pimping. And
literally pimping.
We brought in the women, and that was illegal in Boston in those times. So there were a few illegal things, sort of minor infringements, but the majority of what we did was completely within the limits of the law.
And briefly, the Saudi Arabia story, just so folks know what you're talking about, this is the issue. It's money laundering, right? It's oil money.
Huge.
And infrastructure, and the U.S. agreeing to keep the Saudi royal family in power. Is that, what are the basic outlines?
In exchange for the Saudis guaranteeing the price of oil, staying within certain limits, which are acceptable to us, which they've done for 40 years now, and in exchange for them reinvesting petrodollars into government, U.S. government securities, of which the interest could be used to hire U.S. companies to rebuild Saudi Arabia, which we've been doing, we then guaranteed to keep the Royal House of Saud in power, as long as they did that. And we've done that.
And you were part of brokering that deal originally, and obviously we're still living with the consequences of that deal.
Incredibly. This happened, I was in Saudi Arabia brokering that deal in 1974. And it's in detail in Confessions of an Economic Hitman. But the deal has held, and it's still there. And it's we tried to replicate that deal in Iraq, and Saddam Hussein didn't buy. Now, when the economic hitmen fail, as we failed in Iraq, the next line of defense is the jackals, who are CIA-sanctioned assassins or troublemakers, go in and they try to get rid of the government, either through coups or through assassination. They also failed in Iraq.
Who makes that call? Like, who makes the call of, this isn't working, bring in the jackals?
It's the intelligence community, which usually involves the CIA and the NSA working together.
Give me, 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 give me,
Gouda?
No.
Edam? Caithness? Smoked Austria?
No.
Japanese Sage Derby?
No.
You do have some cheese, do you?
Of course, sir. It's a cheese shop, sir. We got...
No, no, don't tell me. I'm keen to guess.
Fair enough.
Wednesday dough?
Yes.
Ah, well, I'll have some of that.
Oh, I thought you were talking to me, sir. Mr. Wensleydale, that's my name.
Greek feta?
Not as such.
Aren't you kind of the same age as me? You were like 42.
Yeah.
So it took you 40 years to figure out to imitate me? I mean, you know, so anyway, so they got fired, and someone said to me, well, what do you think of the fire? And I go, what's the difference? They're just going to replace those guys with more clones.
They got more in the wings.
Who cares?
Come on.
I just think they blew it. They had a good...
And when the jackals fail, as they did with Saddam Hussein...
We elect Bush.
We send in the military.
Exactly.
We send in our young men and women to die and to kill.
Before we take a call, I just have one quick question. I just wish you could stay here for like 3 days. Is there one thing that you had to do that you said to yourself, you know what, I'll wash but I'll never be clean, this is like the thing I don't know how I'm going to reconcile with myself?
Liz, I said that about so much that I did, and as I said earlier, I think, you know, my story is one of a guy that was well intended and always thought he was going to get out of it and somehow turn into something positive, being seduced by the three most powerful drugs in our culture,
mm-hmm.
sex, power, and money. And I was seduced, but it always bothered my conscience. And a lot of the book goes into the details of how I struggled with that, how I justified it in my own mind.
We do have a few.
I want to ask him if Mr. Perkins, these policies that are in place, do they go back to the 1980s under the Reagan administration, what they call structural adjustment programs, where we loan money to third world countries through the IMF and the World Bank?
Yeah, Reagan really formalized that. They actually, you know, I was doing this in the 1970s also, so it had begun a long time before Reagan. It began under McNamara as president of the World Bank. As you may remember, McNamara had been Secretary of Defense under both Kennedy and Johnson. When he took over the World Bank, he implemented these. Reagan really formalized that process at a government level, but it had been going on even before that.
Let's go to Bob in Rochester, New York.
Right. That's what people are saying. They're saying, you have this mea culpa, you've done this thing, you've written this book, you feel bad, but yet they're saying, wow, how is it that it's okay?
Well, we're all part of the system. I mean, you know, what I was doing, I was praised by people like Robert McNamara, head of the World Bank. I was doing what was praised as good work. I was chief economist of a major company. I was constantly being patted on the back. And we were increasing gross national product in companies, in countries, which is considered a good thing by economists. Now, the fact that in most of these countries, only a very few people at the top of the economic pyramid benefited from GNP, didn't go into the accounts. But the fact is that every one of us out there is participating in this. It's our tax dollars, it's our spending habits, and we all need to take responsibility for this. I do need to take responsibility. I do take responsibility. And as many nights I didn't sleep, writing the book has relieved me of a huge burden. And I postponed it. I was bribed. I was paid $500,000 in the 90s not to write this book.
Huh.
And I was bribed and I was threatened, and I went along with those until September 11th.
Hmm. Are you...
Well, actually, Dave, I originally wrote it as a screenplay, and it didn't work for me.
Приговор окончательный, обжалованию не подлежит. Осужденный Матурин, вам понятен приговор? Следуйте за мной.
Gorgonzola? No. Parmesan? Mozzarella? Pickle no. Crema? Dates?
Killing all them girls on the freeway, Bob.
I remember taping it, and what I remember about everything was your breaking Robbo in. This was the first time playing with Brian Roberts.
Yeah, he broke in by then. He'd done a few shows with him by then.
Uh-huh.
We're still terrified, though.
How did you come across Brian? It skips my memory.
How did we come across him?
Yeah, how did you hook up with Brian? What was the connection again?
Well, I knew him from Thin Lizzy for years, you know. I mean, I used to meet him under tables in clubs all over London. You know, we were friends, like drinking companions for a long time. And then he was one of Phil's heroes as well, you know, because Phil's hero was Brian Downey. He followed closely by Brian Robertson, followed by Phil Lynott.
Bimbo, Czech sheep's milk, no. Venezuelan beaver cheese.
Not today, sir, no.
And it didn't work for me, and it so didn't work, I didn't even show it to my agent.
Thousands of people die every day.
I love it when you can get to places and see what it used to be. The whole country was like this once. Paradise.
Ruined now.
It's still a great country. Best place on earth. Best place to be.
What am I doing with you? With anyone, I should be exterminated, but with you? Married, probably bisexual, Mormon, Republican, closet case. I mean, I really like you a lot, but... So, the fruity underwear you wear, the
temple garment.
Oh my God. What's it for?
Protection? The second skin? Stop wearing it.
How can you stop wearing it if it's a skin? Your past, your beliefs. In bed, you're so sweet, and I don't see how you believe the stuff you do.
I don't want to fight now. Stop attacking me, Lewis.
No, but, I mean, you make no sense. The Republican Party is... I mean, I hate the Democrats, too, but the Republicans. Half religious zealots wanting to control every breath every citizen takes... And half ego anarchist libertarian cowboys shrilling for no government. McCarthyism, Watergate, Pat Buchanan, Jesse Helms,
Barry Goldwater, George Will,
George Bush, Newt Gingrich, objectively speaking, a rum bunch.
Responsible for everything bad and evil in the world.
Throw Reagan on the pile and you're not far off.
I tell you, if people like you didn't have President Reagan to demonize, where would you be?
If he didn't have people like me to demonize, where would he be? Upper right-hand square on the Hollywood Square.
I'm not your enemy, Lewis.
I never said you were my enemy.
Can you be, I don't know, happy?
No one is happy.
You believe the world is perfectible.
No.
No, yes you do. And so you find it unsatisfying. You have to reconcile yourself to the world's unperfectibility. Be in the world, but not of the world. That's what being a Mormon is.
That's what being a schizophrenic is.
Republican, Democrat, it's life. Time is conservative. It moves slow. Accept that. Don't be tragic. Accept as rightfully yours the happiness that comes your way.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You have a good heart. The good thing is to be guilty and kind always, but it's not always kind to be gentle and soft. There's a genuine violence in softness and weakness, and sometimes self-interested is the most generous thing you can be.
Learn the rules. Just give me the rules. Just teach me the rules. Machines.
A lot of writers who ultimately get representation out there should take note. Don't show everything to your agent.
And I'll perform. Teach me the rules.
But there was something in the story, and I started to write a short story in the first person of Miles, where he goes to a wine tasting that kind of goes out of control.
Ah, how about cheddar?
Well, we don't get much corporate around here.
Not much corporate. It's the single most popular cheese in the world.
Around here. Yes, sir.
World.
Around here, sir.
And what is the most popular cheese around here?
And I'll be perfect. Dominating. A reality that terrifies you. Because you're so, number six, alienated. Totally alienated from your worth. And number seven, caught in what we call active self-pity. Most often victimhood. Becoming a victim of your own overly active male energy. Underly active feminine energy. Becoming a victim. As you look at your life to see where you fit in this category, do you dismiss things because it's, that's just a woman? Or it's a man, so he must know what he's talking about. Do you find yourself just concerned with let's do it, let's just do what needs to get done, let's not feel about it, let's not stop the process about it, let's not discuss it, let's just do it? Do you get yourself in that place? Do you get yourself in that place where you are just a machine? Just a machine.
At the end of that short story, I thought, oh my gosh, I can have Jack show up now, and they're ready to take off. He's waiting for them at this, and suddenly everything took off from there. Once I found that first person voice of Miles, which was not evident in the screenplay at all, I had like, I don't want to sound pretentious here, but I felt like I had the soul, what became the soul of the book.
Bitter lady of the plains, talk to me. Tell me what to do. I'm stuck. My heart's an anchor. Oh, wow. Look. The magic of a theater or something.
Look at you. So perfect in place.
The desert, the mountains, the previous century. Maybe I could have believed in you then. Maybe we should never have moved east. Was it a hard thing to do, crossing the prairies?
You ain't stupid, so don't ask stupid. Ask something for real.
In your experience of the world, how do people change?
Well, it has something to do with God, so it's not very nice. God splits the skin with a jagged thumbnail from throat to belly. Then plunges a huge, filthy hand in. He grabs hold of your bloody tubes, and they slip to evade his grasp, but he squeezes hard, he insists. He pulls and pulls till all your innards are yanked out. And the pain, you can't even talk about that. And then he stuffs them back, dirty, tangled, torn. It's up to you to do the stitching.
Get up and walk around.
Just mangled guts pretending.
Yeah. That's how people change.
Other people's expectations and other people's demands. Are you caught in your own image, caught in your own mystique, unable to admit where you're feeling weak and where you're feeling like a failure, unable to admit that everything isn't perfect in your reality? Are you dominating, terrified of this world that you've got to get so right, so perfect, before you dare take a step? Are you alienated? No real sense of where you're going, what you're doing, why you're doing it.
Ultimately, I think to some extent the soul of the movie, and it just changed everything, and that's what made me want to write it as a book.
Is black and the wife is white, the children are black, and they see their black father with a white woman, and they start wondering why this white woman would want to get her hook in this man. So the children become polarized and confused as to why mommy has glommed onto a proud black man and not a white man. And the idea is to reconstruct and to reinforce the integrity of the black family.
These are whereabouts of the Grail.
Bouts of the Grail. These mysterious others have used members of the fanatical Catholic order, the Opus Dei, as pawns to lead them to the place of the Grail's hiding.
I dare say a certain common egomania played its part in the parallel.
I'm sure it did. But the fascinating, indeed to me the horrifying thing, was that after bracketing Beethoven and Fischer, Schoenberg wrote a summating article for the Times, an intensely admiring article as far as Fischer was concerned, under the title Psychic Murder at the Chessboard.
Oh, but Glenn, surely this chap Schoenberg was simply playing word games.
I don't think so, Harry. I grant you that some years ago I applied myself to a rather facetious article which analyzed Mr. Schoenberg's critical prose style because I noticed that to an extraordinary extent adjectives normally associated with sports in general and pugilism in particular found their way into his descriptions of concert experiences, which is perhaps understandable in view of the fact that he began his career behind the sports desk.
But surely that's his problem and not a valid comment on competition per se.
Oh, but it is, you see. Because my argument isn't really about sport. My argument is about the whole phenomenon of the competitive fact. You know, much as I abhor that title...
Psychic murder.
At the chessboard, right. I do think it's singularly evocative. I'm not prepared to concede that the damage done to the ego, as Bobby Fischer would put it, of Petrosian or Bent Larsen or Spassky or anybody else who has felt compelled to exchange pawns with Fischer in the last few years, is... other than as a difference in kind, in any way distinct from the more easily quantifiable damage of the prize fight, for example.
Plus, in writing a book, I had to go further in terms of creating events, and I was kind of playing off of Murphy's Law, you know, whatever can go wrong will go wrong, and will go wrong badly.
Oh,
Colchester, sir.
Is it?
Oh, yes, sir. It's staggeringly popular in this manuscript.
Is it?
It's our number one bestseller, sir.
I see. Ilchester, eh?
Right, sir.
All right. Okay. Have you got any? He asked, expecting the answer no.
I'll have a look, sir. No.
It's not much of a cheese shop, is it?
Finest in the district, sir.
Explain the logic underlying that conclusion, sir.
Well, it's so clean, sir.
It's certainly uncontaminated by cheese.
You haven't asked me about limbo, sir.
Is it worth it? Have you shut that bloody bazooki up?
Told you, sir.
Have you got any Limburger?
No.
That figures. Predictable, really, I suppose. It was an act of purest optimism to oppose the question in the first place. Tell me.
Yes, sir?
Have you, in fact, got any cheese here at all?
Yes.
Really?
No, not really, sir.
You haven't?
No, sir, not a scrap. I was deliberately wasting your time, sir.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to shoot you.
Righto, sir.
What a senseless waste of human life.
I kept, like, trying to up the ante.
Whatever comes, which you have to admire in Gorbachev and the Russians, is that they're making a leap into the unknown. You can't wait around for a theory. The sprawl of life, the weird...
Interconnectedness.
Yes.
Maybe the sheer size of the terrain.
It's all too much to be encompassed by a single theory now.
The world is faster than the mind.
That's what politics is, the world moving ahead, and only in politics does the miraculous occur.
But that's a theory.
Well, yes, but you can't live in the world without an idea of the world. But it's living that makes the ideas. You can't wait for a theory, but you have to have a theory.
Go know, as my grandma would say.
Living now just to get to the next moment so that you can get to the next one.
Gentlemen, this is the fourth floor intelligence division.
What?
I'm really sorry.
To get to tomorrow, this week to next week, this year to next year. Are you a victim of the very reality you created?
On that, and I pushed it much further than the screenplay, but it was that first person narrating voice with
just a minute, we're going to go back to the troubadour for the rewriting of the national anthem.
Those are the imbalances. That's how most of the world functions now, even the women's movement. Even those women who are out there with their placards are doing exactly these things. Because they're caught in their own chauvinism. Many of these women who would look at a woman who might do her hair, who might wear makeup and paint her nails as just a frothy, don't pay attention to her, just as chauvinistic as the man might feel. Notice all the in the room, all the uncomfortability as you come in touch with what your own imbalances are. All the shuffling. It's a big wheel. Oh, don't let it be known. Oh. Form is all important. Caught in your own mystique. Caught in your own mystique.
Spins forward. We will be citizens. The time has come. Lina, you are fabulous, each and every one. And I bless you. More life. The great work begins.
I don't care how fucking runny it is. Hand it over with all speed.
Oh! Oh!
What now?
The cat seat.
The galvanic charge, the thing that put me over the top in terms of writing it, and I wrote it very fast from that point.
A lot of people tend to think that working writers are intimately conversant with the New York Times bestseller list, and we know every single thing that's on there. And I don't think this is true, because writers read as part of their work, and we read in a way that is entirely different from people who read for pleasure. We're reading to see how this is done and that is done and so on. And when you find somebody who will teach you something like that, you spend hours reading them. If you cannot find value, professional value and artistic value in something, you don't read for the entertainment.
You wrote another novel.
It's not limited to men, although a lot of men do it. It is also a lot of women who are just as caught up in having the exaggerated male energy, who in a sense looked to men to provide meaning in their life, and when men wouldn't do it, decided to become the men that they wished they could have married, to become the provider they wished they could have found. Women who gave up their femininity as they over-exaggerated the masculine side at the expense of their feminine side. But it balances off the other way, doesn't it? There are also those who, in that sense, in their repugnation to the masculine energy, men and women both, who apologetically hate and dislike that male side of them, and therefore, in that particular sense, reject it, and become overly balanced in the other direction, overly out of balance in the other direction, where indeed they have far too much of the feminine energy and not enough of the masculine energy. One or the other of those circumstances. And that also produces out of balance behavior. First of all, it produces a hatred for men and things masculine. A hatred for men seeing anything male as bullish, dumb, stupid, klutzy, clumsy, bull in a china shop, anything of that sort, that sees men at all, anybody of the male gender, as some sort of klutz, some sort of clown, some sort of absolute dumb bull idiot. And also sees women who perhaps prefer a more aggressive stance in that way, sees women who they feel by their definition are too masculine as being somehow bullish, dumb and stupid, not worth listening to, not worth paying attention to, easy to criticize and to make fun of and to make jokes of. And a lot of those of you who are overemphasizing the feminine to the point of the diminishment of the masculine indeed have a hatred for men. A lot of you men hate men because of that particular energy. A lot of you women, as much as you want to find a him, to grab by the collar and shake and to make him pay for all that he didn't do.
Doc, I do agree. I'm getting tired of going to confession and admitting that I still beat the dummy.
Yeah, well, don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about giving that up.
We at Musket Beer are proud that Winnipeg has been chosen 4 years in a row by the London Times as the world capital of sorrow in the Great Depression. In recognition of this honor, we will be hosting a worldwide contest to determine which nation's music truly deserves to be called the saddest in the world. Aspiring virtuosos of tearful melody are welcome to travel here and lay claim to the jewel-studded crown of frozen tears and $25,000 in prize money.
That's right.
And that's
first, it can be very hard to accept how disappointing life is, Harper. But that's what it is, and you have to accept it. And with faith and time and hard work, you do get to a point where the disappointment doesn't hurt so much, and it gets actually easier to live with. Quite easy. Which is, in its own way, a disappointment. But
I'm not like you. Strange things happen to me all the time, Mother Pitt.
are giving us a sad peek into child burial customs down Mexico way.
The Mexican mama is being very firm with her dead infant. Now go away, she wails.
You are dead. Don't sneak in at night to nurse from my breast. That milk is only for the living.
To Canadian ears, that may sound harsh.
Well, I guess dead children, like any other kind, have got to learn.
We haven't had too many commercials tonight. I mean, it's not like commercial radio, at least. I believe it's now 60% non-programming per hour, per minute. Especially on the very best of shows. Metaphysics. I'm Gary. I'm touching metal. Even if there might be a coating of some sort of poly resin from oil. Two words we never hear. Ever. No, I don't mean cuss words. They're much worse than that. One of them is really bad. So bad you wouldn't believe it. And metaphysics.com, of course. It's where they all are. Underground. Somewhere underneath New Mexico in the U.S. Commingling there. Electoral college is one of the bad words. And the really, really bad one. It's hemp. Hemp. I think my producer sort of protected our asses there. In metaphysics. Rolling. Of course, there's plenty about genetic engineering. Which I don't even think exists. It's just much too much paperwork on that kind of stuff. Procedural, experimental data, lab protocols, assistant upon assistant upon assistant test tube cleanings. You know how that works. Academic funding paperwork. Paperwork beyond belief. Then the intergovernmental liaison groups with delegated positions, all requiring much paperwork. And then you get to the bureaus in the government. You know what that kind of paperwork is. And then the spooks and the liaisons to the private money. And all the charade commissions and commissions reports and records of the commission's reports. And then the digital storage of all the paperwork. Encased in a magnetic field. Like the Beatles talked about. Nowhere do you ever hear the word hemp, however. You may hear about marijuana. However, negatively. Never about hemp. Been here all the time.
Time, or because there's something emotional in a mediocre film. Look, what is it?
Yeah, that one, I started daydreaming a bit about my brother, something I almost never do. And I know he was a bit of a science fiction enthusiast and kind of a technical freak. He built a stereo with his bare hands when he was 15 years old, and built a radio station and was arrested for broadcasting, from a pirate station when he was a young teen. And so I just started thinking of... I started daydreaming that I was watching this movie with him for some reason. This is something I've never done before. And then the movie was so overwhelmingly filled with effects that he would never have been able to comprehend at his young age. And then, but then it was so incomprehensibly boring at the same time that I remember thinking that maybe my brother would decide that he should have lived all along just because these movies are so cool and so technically slick, and the excitement of science would have made it worthwhile to keep on living. And then I realized I was losing him as the movie got worse and worse, and that by the end of the movie he was back in his grave and I was looking for one for myself. I don't know.
Oh gosh.
God, hempit motherfuckers. Don't call the studio now. Get me thrown off the fucking air.
Gouda?
No.
Edam?
No.
Caithness? Smoked Austrian?
No.
Japanese Sage Derby?
No, sir.
You do have some cheese, don't you?
Of course, sir. It's a cheese shop, sir.
This summer, I'm going to give a class in mushroom identification at the New School for Social Research. Actually, it's 5 field trips, not really a class at all. However, when I proposed it to Dean Clara Meyer, though she was delighted with the idea, she said, "I'll have to let you know later whether or not you'll give it." So she spoke to the president, who couldn't see why there should be a class in mushrooms at the New School. Next, she spoke to Professor McIver, who lives in Piermont. She said, "What do you think about our having a mushroom class at the New School?" He said, "Fine idea. Nothing more than mushroom identification develops the powers of observation." This remark was relayed to the president and to me. It served to get the class into the catalog and to verbalize for me my present attitude toward music. It isn't useful, music isn't, unless it develops our powers of audition. But most musicians can't hear a single sound, they listen only to the relationship between two or more sounds. Music to them has nothing to do with their powers of audition, but only to do with their powers of observing relationships. In order to do this, they have to ignore all the crying babies, fire engines, telephone bells, coughs that happen to occur during their audition. Actually, if you run into people who are really interested in hearing sounds, you're apt to find them fascinated by the quiet ones. Did you hear that? They will say. In 1954, when I went to Europe, I no sooner arrived in Paris than I noticed that the city was covered with posters publicizing a mushroom exhibition that was being held in the Botanic Garden. That was all I needed. Off I went. When I arrived, I found myself in a large room filled with many tables upon which were displayed many species of fungi. On the hour, loudspeaker, a recorded lecture on the deadly poisonous anemones. During this lecture, nobody in the hall moved or spoke. Each person's attention was, so to speak, riveted to the information being given. A week later, I was in Cologne, in Germany, attending a concert of electronic music. There was also an audience of large loudspeakers. However, many in the audience were dozing off, and some were talking to their neighbors. I went to a concert upstairs in Town Hall. The composer whose works were being performed had provided program notes. One of these notes was to the effect that
we could see this 4,500-foot drop that was waiting for us. And so it was a great relief that by 2 o'clock in the afternoon we got onto the North Ridge and off the West Face. And we vowed that we didn't want to go near Andean flutings again.
We were pretty tired, really, by the time we got up onto the ridge.
I was knackered. And I remember thinking, oh, sod the summit, we've done the face. And I think, I can't really be bothered to go all the way up there. And then we thought, well, hang on now, you know, we have come all this way, we might as well stand on the top.
You like summits?
Because 80% of accidents happen on descent.
We decided before we even climbed the face that we were going to come down the north ridge of the mountain, down to a col between the mountain Sula Grande and another mountain called Urupaha. And then we'd be able to abseil down a smaller section of the face. We expected this ridge to be quite an easy way to descend, and it turned out to be very difficult.
Shanty is a group of the mafia that never made it. Yes, you know that we always hear about the successful mafia, but you know, back in the 1880s, a group was formed called the Cockney Shanty Avanti Gardies. And they had a hell of a time. They tried to, you know, hold up stuff and rob trains and stuff. All wound up in jail, got their heads beat in, and they just didn't make it. And for us Cockney Shanty, this, watch the letters come out on that one. Yes, indeed. You know, the old traditional signature of the ancient mafia was the black hand. When you came home and there was a black hand on your apartment door, you just better get yourself a tin suit and run like hell. But the signature of the Cockney Shanty was the black pinky print of a foot. And nobody could identify it. It just looked like a little ink blot. And so that's another thing that caused them to not make it. You've got to have a really identifiable symbol. If you have something that nobody knows what the hell, what's that? Well, we spilled the ink on the door there. And that's no good.
In the world. After the concert, I was walking along with the composer, and he was telling me how the performances had not been quite up to snuff. So I said, well, I enjoyed the music, but I don't agree with that program note about there being too much pain.
The European races are often the greatest whores, but at least they are whores to whom God gave will and power, and whom he seems to have destined for some time to be at the head of mankind.
Come on now, Glenn. Boris Spassky didn't end up out on his feet with an X-rayable concussion and the likelihood of scar tissue.
How do you know he didn't psychologically? How do you know that the stress of those, how many did they play?
21 games.
Those 21 games couldn't be or hasn't been responsible for metabolic changes in the system. And in fishers, for that matter. We can't assume that victors are immune, you know. Every bit as drastic, at least in their ultimate physical result, as those suffered by any punch-drunk fighter. Rising up like a beautiful bubble to the surface.
Why do you keep your eyes closed?
I don't.
You always do. No. You can say why. I already know the answer.
Then why do I have to?
You imagine things. Imagine men.
Yes.
Imagining. Just like me. So the only time I wasn't imagining is when I was with you. You, the only part of the real world I wasn't allergic to.
Please don't.
But I only thought I wasn't dreaming. Oh, oh, back in Brooklyn, back with...
I'm going out. I have to get some stuff I left behind.
Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. Here. Look here at me.
What?
What do you see?
What do I...
What do you see?
Nothing. Nothing. I see nothing.
Thank you.
For what?
Finally. The truth.
I'm going. Out. Just out.
Goodbye.
Hatred. Just as the male chauvinism, so female chauvinism. But understand, male chauvinism does not apply to males. Male chauvinism applies to those, males or females, who overvalue maleness. Female chauvinism isn't something that is about women. It is about people who overvalue the feminine energy. And those that have gone for centuries speaking of the male god, as God, the only God, the Father God, etc., are now being countered by those who are saying God is nothing, Goddess is all. She is all that counts. She is all that matters. And they're making the same mistake in the other direction. Well, it's all right because there's been thousands of years of masculine godhood, and therefore it's about time we balanced it out to the little female godhood. We would suggest here that there's been the counterbalance balancing all through history. It's time that you bring the two of them together to create a god-goddess energy rather than sticking up and defending one at the expense of the other. Neither position is of value. Both positions are limiting. And we would suggest here that therefore the female chauvinist is the person, male or female, who says if it's a woman, it's better than if it's a man. And that's what happens when you overemphasize the feminine at the expense or underemphasize the masculine at the expense. Secondly, what was developed in this imbalance is that there's all kinds of content but no form. No way of implementing, no way of putting what you have together. I have all this material, but I don't know how to put it into form. I don't know where to put it, I don't know where to place it. And there's very little attention to any kind of context. The person who's going to write the book and has all the data collected but can't ever quite get sit down to do it. The person who's gone to school for 10, 20, 30 years has a raft of degrees that are impressive as can be but can't find a job. Won't find a job, won't put it to work, won't find a form to express all this content in, or a context in which to play it out. The overemphasizing of that feminine energy at the expense of the doing. The third imbalance that occurs is harboring emotion, clinging and harboring negative emotion, holding on to it, unable to transform reality, refusing to transmute, unable to transform, because I want to cling to this resentment, I want to cling to this anger, I want to hold on to it, to blaming, I want to hold on to the righteousness. I have all these emotions and I'm just caught up in them. And you've seen people like this. Well, I'm just still so angry at what they did to me 20 years ago. I'm still so angry at my parents that I just can't function yet. It's been 30 years, I don't care, I'm still angry. Every time I think about it, I get angry all over again. But I can't forgive, or I won't forgive, or whatever, because I'm clinging to those emotions. Whereas in the other energy, where the male is overemphasized, there's no emotions being expressed at all. Here, that's all that's being expressed. All just over and over again. You're feeling sad. Oh, yes, I can get into my sadness and do it for days. Months, years. And fourthly, there is the stagnation of dreams, delusions, self-delusion, and unfinished fantasies. We call them decaying dreams, where I have all these ideas, you see. Someday I'm going to do this, someday I'm going to do that, someday, 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 but never someday comes. Decaying dreams, fantasies that never get fulfilled, delusions that are lived in, delusions of grandeur, delusions of success, delusions of brilliance, getting caught in the delusions, in the decaying dreams of your reality.
So let's forget the Dudley damn do-right crap, because out here, it's kill your parents, fuck your friends, and have a nice day!
He said, "What? Don't you think there's enough?" I said, "I think there's just the right amount."
"So what's that?" "Oh, I thought you were talking to me, sir. Mr. Wensley, though, that's my name."
"Greek feta?"
"Not as such."
Gorgonzola?"
"No."
"Parmesan?"
"No."
"Mozzarella?"
Without ever using that word, I am a writer. And I think I began because I really, and I'm sorry if it sounds a little facile, But I really wanted to read that book. Yeah. And it didn't exist.
How old were you?
I was over 30. I didn't start as a young aspiring writer. I was a reader, and I thought everything that I needed to know had been written, and all I had to do was find it.
It's called on the west side, with the cornices overhanging the west side, and on the east side, steep flutings running down 3,000 feet below us.
It was a shock, really, and it was quite dangerous, and it all got a bit out of control, really, at that stage of things.
And within about half an hour to an hour of leaving the summit, we were lost. We were in a wire. We couldn't see anything.
But at some point, for a number of reasons, I wanted to read a certain kind of book that I couldn't find. And the whole act of writing for me at that time was almost like a long read that took 3 or 4 years. In the case of the first book I wrote, The Bluest Eye, it took 5 years. That was a sustained process because if I didn't like the way it read, then I would change it, you see. But perhaps that was really a kind of subtle protection of actually entering to a field that I thought was theirs or someone else's. Or
what was it that you wanted to read in The Bluest Eye that you hadn't met anywhere else?
I really wanted to see what it would be like if a black child held the stage. They had always been peripheral in texts. They had always been somebody's prop or a joke or a comic relief or tragic notes, but they had never held the stage.
He's the guy who's been killing all them girls on the freeway, Bob. Girls, Bob.
I've absolutely reached my fucking limit with people like you, Vanessa.
What kind of people am I supposed to be?
Alcoholics, the drug addicts, the fathers who fuck their daughters, the drug addicted mother fucking whores with their bastard fucking off.
Hey, I ain't no trick baby.
I call them garbage people.
Howard Stern, and they all yell, Howard Stern sucks, man, and you gotta give me a chance, because he sucks, and you might think I suck, but you've gotta listen to me, because, you know, maybe it's time for the new kind of show, Bubba Show. So I'm like sitting and listening to it, I go, okay, you know, maybe he is better than me, let's hear what he's got. He's doing Kermit the Frog singing about sodomy. He's like, welcome here to Sodomy Street. And I'm like, what the hell bit is this?
Favored imperialism for its civilizing work, but even more for the glory it brought the imperial power. He was particularly stirred by the Raj, the British dominion over India. This brought him into conflict with his friends among the English classical liberals. In 1857, the Sepoy Rebellion, the mutiny of native troops in India, broke out, with appalling massacres on both sides. Nassau Sr. represented the Little England, or anti-imperialist position, which was standard among British liberals. In the summer of 1858, Sr. wrote to Tocqueville,
"The world, I think, is gradually coming over to an opinion which, when I maintained it 30 years ago, was treated as a ridiculous paradox, that India is and always has been a great misfortune to us, and that if it were possible to get quit of it, we should be richer and stronger."
having some coffee. Thank you. Hello, everybody. This is Albert Brooks, and I'm real happy to be here. Don't ask me how it happened, why I'm in this town. It's a long story, but anyway, they said, would you come down to the station, take some calls? I said, you got it. So call in, we'll chat, and have some fun. What do I do? Line one it is. Let's go. Hello, this is Albert Brooks.
The woman that called in earlier college.
No, no, wait.
I'm so sick of that. Save the trees. What are you going to build your house out of? Meat?
No, no, sir. This is Albert Brooks. I don't know what call you're referring to.
What the hell is going...
Okay, fine. Let's go to line two
You can hear him talking.
Hello, yes, this is Albert Brooks.
Hey.
No, man, put down the phone. No, come back, please. Come on the air.
Al.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. You're too much. We're big fans of yours.
Oh, thank you very much. What's on your mind?
Listen, I got a joke for you.
Ah, shoot.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. It's one of these good news, bad news jokes.
Oh, okay.
All right, now, you play a part in it, too.
Right.
I'm going to say to you, Al.
Yeah.
I got some good news and bad news.
Right, and I'll say...
My name's Tom.
Yeah.
You say, Tom, give me the bad news.
All right.
And then I'll give you the bad news, and then you say, give me the good news.
Fine. Okay,
all
Tom,
right?
Give me the bad news.
Then we got a little break in the cloud, and I saw the ridge, so I started climbing back up to it. I didn't know because of the side of the ridge I was on, but it was actually an enormous cornice, an overhang of snow and ice, and I was walking up over the top of it. I was left hanging, looking down, as all this snow and ice then fell away from me down the west side of Sula Grande. You know, I got back up on the ridge and I shouted down to Joe that I'd found the ridge, you know. I said, I found the ridge, Joe.
We'd hoped to have got down that day, but by the time it got dark, we were still very high, still at 20,000 feet. And that night, as we made a brew, the gas ran out.
What?
What's the bad news?
Oh, I didn't know we were starting.
Yeah.
I've got to start.
All right.
Al,
yeah.
I got some good news and bad news for you.
Okay, Tom.
Yeah?
Give me the bad news.
All right, Al. The bad news is I haven't got any good news for you.
Uh-oh. What's the good news, Tom?
Well, the good news, Al, it's all the bad news I got.
Oh, great.
Little different, isn't it?
Certainly
is.
It's
a switch.
It is a switch.
A feminine perception, a child's perception, or my recollection. And all of those memories, what it had really been like.
Ask me. Go.
I can't. I'm scared of you.
You know something, Vanessa, Lutz? I'm getting ready to take a seriously big shit right on top of that pointy little head of yours. Box.
And get busy. I'm making so much dough, I'm getting dizzy.
Dizzy, like a yo-yo.
Homeboy hanging, looking good to go. We don't play, we do a show.
Yo.
Rapping the same line twice in a row.
Yo.
Twice in a row, yeah, twice in a row.
Yo.
I've got a big fat bottom.
Sampling. We're doing it. We take a good tune, and then we ruin it. Overdoing it, yeah, we're overdoing it.
I've got a big fat bottom.
Boom, 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 boom. Boom, 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 boom,
boom. He's got a big fat bottom.
Boom, 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 boom.
Kramer, Danish bimbo, Czech sheep's milk, Venezuelan beaver cheese.
Not today, sir, no.
What people say, the black hand, great scuttle!
Then what, you know? And somebody hollers, correcto! That's one of my favorite commercials, the one where the girl says, correcto! What commercial is that?
But more often, it was not socially radical. People were alienated as they enrolled in the camp meetings of the backwoods of New York and Connecticut, in the backwoods of Pennsylvania and Ohio, in Illinois and Kentucky. They would be alienated from American institutions and from American politics.
Let's both laugh at it.
Sure.
All right? Thanks, Tom.
All right.
All right, let's go on line three. Hello. Oh, my, listen. That's interesting. Hello?
I play 11 other instruments.
Very good.
Goodbye.
All right. Goodbye. Let's go to line three. Hello.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Albert Brooks.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, nice to talk to you. Listen, I'm a disc jockey here in town.
Uh-huh.
And on the side, I'm into kind of a comedy bag.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a few questions. Pick your brain.
All right, be careful.
Oh, for sure. All right, how important is the element of surprise in comedy?
That's about the stupidest question I've ever heard. What kind of a moron are you?
Hey, watch it, will you?
No, you see, I was just surprising you.
Surprising me. I get it. I see what you did. You turned it around.
That's right.
All right.
Yeah.
What about delivery?
Well, I think you can pick it up yourself, can't you?
All right, I guess I could, but what if you're a two-man team? Each guy pick up half of it?
Mm-hmm.
Pick up alphabet.
Writing.
I'm writing.
All right.
Finally, one last question.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, how important is writing your own material?
Well, I think it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think funny?
I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think funny, but I am funny.
Are you really funny?
Really funny.
Well, I'd say you're all right then. Just do the best you can.
Best you can.
Mm-hmm.
Out of sight.
Thank
you.
Hey,
drive carefully, huh?
I will. All right, let's move on.
You see, I'm convinced that the distinction that you're trying to make, Harry, the distinction between, well, observable physical damage, eh, and the more insidious psychological damage...
It was pretty obvious the following morning that we'd descended the worst part of the ridge, and I was pretty confident that we'd get back down to the base camp that day. I thought at that stage it was pretty much in the bag, I suppose, the whole climb.
I was ahead of Simon, and suddenly there was this vertical wall bisecting the ridge. I had to sort of get down on my hands and knees, hammer both my axes into the ice at the top, and then lower myself off the ice cliff. When you hammer the axe in, you listen to the sound it makes, and you look at it. I was hanging by both axes. I think I took the hammer out, and what I wanted to do is now place it in the vertical wall, and I swung, and the pick went in, and it just made a strange sound. And I thought, well, I'll take it out, make a good placement, because I just wanted to put bomber dead solid axe placements in all the way down. And I was about to swing at the ice again. Down my thigh and my knee was very, very, very painful.
Oh, no, 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 no!
The impact drove my lower leg straight through my knee joint. As the bone went into my femur, it split the tibial plateau straight off and carried on up. Quite a while with pain. I couldn't cope with it at first. I just breathed a lot and it started to go, and I can remember looking across to the west and seeing that we were level with the summit of Rasnak. So I had a height gauge of where we were, and I just thought, I can't have broken my leg. If I broke my leg, I'm dead.
In 1949, Merce Cunningham and I went to Europe on a Dutch boat. As we were approaching Rotterdam, the fog became so thick that landing was delayed. Expedite matters, the customs officials came aboard the boat. Passengers formed into lines and one by one were questioned. Merce Cunningham was in one line, I was in another. I smoked a great deal, whereas he doesn't smoke at all. However, he was taking 5 cartons of cigarettes into Europe for me, and I had that number myself. We were both traveling through Holland to Belgium and then France. And the customs regulations vary for all those countries with regard to cigarettes. For instance, you could at that time take 5 cartons per person into France, but only 2 per person into Holland. When I got to my customs officer, all of this was clear to both of us.
How about cheddar?
Well, we don't have much corporate around here.
Not much. It's the single most popular...
Fifthly. Manipulation, the term is negative, destructive manipulations.
when you have an overemphasis of the feminine at the expense of the masculine. That's what's referred to as the, quote, dark side. Yeah? That's what's referred to when people think of evil. Well, manipulations are not just manipulations for manipulation's sake, control or be controlled, but to dominate and to control out of vengeance, out of jealousy, out of hatred. To hurt for the sake of hurting, and to destroy yourself just for the feeling of it. Destructive manipulation. And sixthly, functioning in potentia. Always having the grand scheme. Yeah? Men and women, both, who have spurned the masculine energy and have adopted and embraced only the feminine, are often in potentia. They cannot make anything actual. He's the one that has this scheme. This get-rich-quick scheme. It's going to work. It's going to work. I just know it is. And goes from one thing to another. And never manifests the scene. She is the one who has all these dreams and hopes, if she could just get the money, if she could just find a man, if she could just have somebody take care of the kids, if she could just get her degree, if she could just do this, if she could just do that. Living in potential, but never in actuality. Living in potential.
Flight to San Francisco. Chase the moon across America. God, it's been years since I was on a plane. When we hit 35,000 feet, we'll have reached the tropopause, the great belt of calm air, as close as I'll ever get to the ozone. I dreamed we were there. The plane leapt the tropopause, the safe air, and attained the outer rim, the ozone, which was ragged and torn, patches of it threadbare as old cheesecloth, and that was frightening, but I saw something only I could see because of my astonishing ability to see such things. Souls were rising from the earth, far below, souls of the dead, of people who'd perished from famine, from war, from the plague, and they floated up like skydivers in reverse, limbs all akimbo, wheeling and spinning. And the souls of these departed joined hands, clasped ankles, and formed a web, a great net of souls. And the souls were three-atom oxygen molecules of the stuff of ozone, and the outer rim absorbed them and was repaired. Nothing's lost forever. In this world, there's a kind of painful progress. Longing for what we've left behind and dreaming ahead. At least, I think that's so.